Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Mamaisha, Kalo, Dajita, Nishpalo, Gato, Mamaisha, Kalo, Jita, Nishpalo, Gataro, Mamaisha, Kalo, Jita, Nishpalo, Gato, Raja, Sri Yonadha, Madasha, Bhu, Pate, Raja, Sri Yonadha, Madasha, Bhu, Pate,
Raja,
Sri Yonadha, Madasha, Bhu, Pate, Maisha kalo jita nishpalo gato. Raja shionada madasya bhupate. Matyatma budhe
sutta
dara
kosha
bhushu. Matyatma buddhe sutta dara kosha bhushu. I can never figure out how to say SV. This is not a word that I can get around. Matyatma buddhe sutta dara kosha bhushu. But if you listen to Prabhupada's lectures, you'll see that he generally says words like that. He pronounces the V like a U. So I figure it's okay for me to do that too. Asa jamanasya
duranta
chintaya. Asa jamanasya duranta chintaya. Asa jamanasya duranta chintaya. Matyatma buddhe sutta dara kosha bhushu. Asajja manasya duranta chintaya. Mamaisha kalo jita nishpalo gato. Raja Shriyonada Madasya Bhupate.
Raja Shriyonada Madasya Bhupate.
Matyatma Bhude Sutta Dara Kosha Bhushu.
Matyatma Bhude Sutta Dara Kosha Bhushu.
Asajja Manasya Duranta Chintaya.
Asajja Manasya Duranta Chintaya.
Mamaisha Kalo Jita Nishpalo Gato. Raja Sri Yonada Madasya Bhupate.
Raja Sri Yonada Madasya Bhupate.
Matyatma Bhude Sutta Dara Kosha Bhushu.
Matyatma Bhude Sutta Dara Kosha Bhushu.
Asajja Manasya Duranta Chintaya.
Asajja Manasya Duranta Chintaya.
Mamaisha Kalo Jita Nishpalo Gato.
Mamaisha Kalo
Raja Shriyonada Madasya Bhupate.
Raja Shriyonada Madasya Bhupate.
Martyatma Buddhe Sutta Dara Kosha Bhushu.
Martyatma Buddhe Sutta Dara Kosha Bhushu.
Asajja Manasya Duranta Chintaya.
Asajja
Ladies? Ajita, O unconquerable one, Nishpala, fruitlessly, Gata, now gone, Rajya, by kingdom, Shriya, and opulence, Unnadha, built up. Madasya, whose intoxication? Bhupate, a king of the earth. Martya, the mortal body. Atma, as the self. Buddhe, whose mentality? Sutta, two children. Dara, wives. Kosha, treasury. Bhushu, and land. Sajjamanasha, becoming attached. Duranda, endlessly. Chintaya, with anxiety. It's quite similar to a, in some ways, the last few lines are very similar to a verse spoken by Lord Rishabhdev. What's that? Nayam deho deha bhajam niloke kastam kamam atah ahate vidbi bhujam. Yeah, he's talking about how they become attached like hogs and dogs. So he's also describing here, and actually, Muchukunda is putting himself in the category of persons who are very, very attached. However, if we read back through the story, we can see that actually he's not like that at all. But out of humility, he's presenting himself as being a very attached person, because we see under the request of the demigods, particularly Indra, he went and fought with the demigods, fought on behalf of the demigods and protected them from the demons for many, many years. And while he was fighting, all his relatives, his kingdom, he was a great king on the earth, and his kingdom and everything, by the force of time, just vanished. Because, you know, it's described in the scriptures how 1 12-hour period or 1 day of the demigods is equal to 6 months here. The same with the night. So 1 24-hour period for the demigods is 1 year here. So he was fighting for the demigods for many, many years. Not many days, but many years. So all his... And because he was on their planet, he was living in their time. It's interesting how the universal time works, because depending on the level of planet the living entity lives on, then time has a different effect. Even we see, like, even on this planet, you can see, for instance, something like a fly, for instance, lives, I believe, for 7 days, 7 or 8 days, something like that. But for the fly, that's 100 years. It goes through its whole cycle of life in a few days. And there's these insects you can see in Mayapur. They'll start coming out about now when it starts getting hot. And they come out at night after the sun sets, and they die the next morning before the sun rises. So they live their whole life within that, not even 12-hour period. And that's 100 years. They're born, they grow, they mate, they produce byproducts, they remain for some time, they dwindle, they vanish, all within that period. just like we would in our whole lifespan. And so we can see, because like some people say, oh, this is a ridiculous idea. How can you think that, you know, on different planets there's different duration of life? But even in this planet we can see it. You know, and even there's some living entities, like they have these trees that live for 10, 20,000 years. You know? But for them, that's just their 100-year period. So we can see how time is relative to the position that a living entity attains. And even with Lord Brahma, it's described how he has such a phenomenally long lifespan that many people actually consider Lord Brahma as eternal. But Lord Krishna, he says, Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Puna Abhatino Jana Mamupetya Kuntaya Puna Jamma Navidyate. He says, from the highest planet in the universe, Abrahma Bhuva, the planet of Lord Brahma, down to the lowest, you know, the position of the Indragopa. He says, all are places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place. Doesn't matter how long your lifespan is. If you're born in this material world, it's a situation of misery. And this is one of the things that Muchukunda is talking to. He's saying that because I'm born here, therefore I'm a miserly person. I'm a miserable person because I've desired to take birth in this world. Yet we can understand, because of his situation, because he's actually, Lord Krishna appeared to him. He was such a great devotee of Krishna that Lord Krishna agreed to appear to him, and in a most interesting way. It wasn't just, you know, like Krishna, ta-da, here I am. You know, it was like there was a very interesting pastime took place. There was because if we go back a few chapters, we see Jarasandha. It's really interesting, like Krishna's mentality here. One of the reasons Krishna descends on this planet, he says, Paritranaya Saranam Vinaschaya Cha Duskritam, to annihilate the miscreants. So Jarasandha was a particularly puffed up person. And Krishna had the opportunity to kill him how many times? 18 times. 18 times he had this opportunity to kill him. Why didn't he do that? Yeah, Krishna was thinking, this is great, you know, I don't have to go looking for them. Jarasandha's bringing them to my doorstep. You know, the 17th time he brought 23 Akshahini divisions. Akshahini divisions, different figures, but usually about 220,000 soldiers in Akshahini. You know? This is at least this is described in one of the purports in the last chapter. So he's bringing time and time again, he's bringing all these demoniac soldiers right to Krishna's doorstep so Krishna can, you know, fulfill his one of his duties. Or one of the reasons he descends. So, anyhow, so the last time that Jarasandha came, at the same time that this Yavana, called Kalya Yavana, was attacking Krishna, because he was a very, very, very puffed up, proud, very strong person. He was saying, you know, who is there who can fight with me? And then, who was it? Was it Garuda who told him? I don't remember. Narada Muni, that's right, thank you. Narada Muni told him that actually he would be able to find a good fight with the Lord of the Yadavas. And it's interesting also because he had this benediction from Lord Shiva, or actually his father had this benediction from Lord Shiva, that he would be able to cause grief to the Yadavas. Yeah? So Krishna didn't kill him outright, although he could have. He allowed him to, you know, Krishna, he knows all these different benedictions are going on. So rather than just like, you know, killing him outright, he allowed him to come and cause anxiety. And then without actually Krishna, it's described how Krishna just walked out of Dwarka without a weapon and just, you know, walked right past Kalyavana and just walked off. And Kalyavana, he was just infuriated. I mean, how can he do this? Who does he think he is? And then Kalyavana's running after Krishna, shouting all sorts of abuse after him. You know, just like very, very obnoxious things. You know, you just go to a football match here in Australia and you'll get an idea of the types of things he was saying. You know, because he's Yavana, a very low-class person. You know, in Australia, actually, once Prabhupada called Australia Malecha Desh. Malechas and Yavanas are a similar sort of level of persons, so we can understand the kinds of things that Kalyavana was saying. Yet Krishna did not listen to any of this. He wasn't affected by any of this. He wasn't. Just imagine, like, someone's yelling abuse at you. How do you feel? Speak to me like that. I'll show you. You know. But Krishna was not at all disturbed by this. And this is one of Krishna's many opulences. He's manifesting this opulence of vairagya, renunciation. You know, Krishna is the most, it's said, you know, that he's the possessor of all opulences in full. Samagrasya. He's completely possessing all opulences. So he's completely renounced. Anyone can call him any name they like. And we see that, you know, throughout the Mahabharata, throughout the Krishna book, you know, that they're calling him all sorts of different bad names. And he doesn't mind. Doesn't get disturbed at all because he's completely detached. Yeah? And he just always manages to remain just in front of Kaliyavana. And why is that? Why is it that Kaliyavana can't touch him, apart from Krishna's supreme mystic potency? It's because Kaliyavana is a sinful Yavana. And in order to touch the Supreme Personality of God, one has to be purified. Just like here, we're engaging in deity worship. I wasn't really meaning to go in this direction, but it kind of just popped into my head. That when one's engaged in deity worship, we're dealing directly with the Supreme Pure. So in order to interact with Krishna, we must become purified. That's why Brahminical culture is so important. Because Brahminical culture is about cultivating the mode of goodness. And we cultivate the mode of goodness because, as Prabhupada describes, the mode of goodness is the springboard to the transcendental platform. And cultivating the mode of goodness doesn't just mean we become squeaky clean. That is one aspect of it. There are many, many aspects we see in the Gita that describes Samadhamma Taposacham Chantiraja Mevika Jnanam Vijnanamastikam Brahma Kama Svabhavajam. This is Sama, this equanimity. Just like we see, you know, Kaliyavana, he's yelling all kinds of abuse at Krishna. Krishna's just been in Dwarka, where he's. I was just reading about how Krishna moved all the residents of Mathura to Dwarka. It's like he decided to build this wonderful city, extraordinary city. Some people say that this is actually Atlantis. I've heard that. I don't know if this is true or not, but they say this is Atlantis. You know, because we hear of this mystical city of Atlantis, which had all this like brilliant technology and stuff. Apparently in Dwarka, all the buildings were like skyscrapers, very, very tall buildings, and the top section of the buildings was all made of crystal. And on top of this, there were like golden pots, you know, like golden domes on top of them. Very, very beautiful place, and wide streets, highways, and, you know, it's like arterial roads, etc. It's a very, very, you know, modern, well-planned city. And, you know, Krishna, here he is in Dwarka, and, you know, his family members are praising him and, you know, glorifying him, etc. like that, and worshipping him and stuff. And he is not affected by that. We see in this world, you know, when people become worshipped, that actually they become very, very proud and puffed up and think they're something special. And this is very symptomatic of this age of Kali. We see how people are very, very, as Prabhupada would say, the pauper is proud of his penny. And we see that in this age, people, what do they have? They've actually got nothing. Little thing, you know, they maybe got some like little plastic box with some electronic stuff in it called a telephone. You see this sometimes. People sit down, they're comparing their phones. Oh, my phone does this and my phone does that. And the other says, oh, no, but look at this. Look at what my phone does, you know. So proud of this little piece of plastic. A bit of silicone and some wires. That's all it is. It's a piece of junk. Drop it on the ground, see how good it is. I had the experience some time ago. I have one of these PDA things, you know, and it was in my kurta pocket when I was on the altar in New Govardhan, addressing the deities. And then I came out, and it must be that someone had knocked my kurta onto the ground without realizing there was something in the pocket. The screen was cracked from one side to the other, completely useless. It's just a piece of junk. Yet we become so proud of it. You know? And this is the nature in Kali Yuga, how people become very proud very easily. But Krishna, we see, you know, he's there in Dwarka, he's being glorified, he's being worshipped, he's been offering all praise, all respect and reverence. Not affected by it. And he goes outside and Kaliyavana is yelling abuse, spitting venom at him. Not affected by it. Sama, completely peaceful. Huh? We see like Krishna's manifesting all these wonderful qualities. Dhamma, self-control. I think it's peaceful, self-control. Krishna is very, you know, a Brahmana is a very self-controlled person. That even if the objects of the senses are right before him, not affected by it. This is the mode of goodness. Not affected by the objects of the senses. The senses are under control. And this comes from the practice of sadhana bhakti. By performing sadhana bhakti, we are able to withdraw the senses from the objects of the senses. It's described that sometimes the senses are like venomous serpents. And you know what happens when a serpent bites? Then the there's like my wife and myself just spent 2 months in Mayapur, and I went back there. We went to Vrindavan, then we went to Delhi, and my wife came back, and I went back to Mayapur to try and make some arrangement for the school we're starting in December this year. And it was getting quite hot. Yeah, I mean, it's like, just to give you an idea of how hot it was getting, when I flew back from Calcutta to Delhi, they said it was 35 degrees in Delhi. And I walked out of the plane, it felt cool. And to give you an idea of how hot it was in Mayapur. So one of my anxieties in the hot weather in Mayapur is snakes, because I don't like snakes. And they have some very, very venomous snakes. There's one, they have these things called king cobras, which are quite venomous. But they have something that's even more venomous than that, called a crepe. And they're the ones, you know, if you see a crepe, then you may as well say goodbye. You know, it's like they're very poisonous. And you know, like every time I was going outside, going into the bathroom, I was like turning the light on to see if there's any snakes there and stuff. Because, you know, I'm terrified of the things. You know, so I'm not sort of like this sort of transcendental. No matter whatever situation I get into, I don't mind. You know, I'm scared of these things. I admit it. You know, but someone who's actually, you know, so we see like the snake is actually when they bite, they inject their poison, you die. So in the same way with the senses are described to be like a snake, but the snake bites and injects the poison. So the senses, they inject the poison of sense gratification. Yeah? When the senses become agitated by these things, they attract you more to sense gratification. But for one who's been practicing the process of sadhana bhakti, the senses are likened to a serpent that has had the fangs extracted. You know, in India, where these people, you see these people with snakes. Actually, I saw one boy in Vrindavan, he had this snake. And what they do is like they're poisonous snakes, but they pull the fangs out so that the snake, he may bite, but there's no way of injecting the venom. So when one has been practicing sadhana bhakti, then the senses are likened to a serpent that has had the fangs extracted. So the serpent, by instinct, will still bite, but that produces no effect. So in the same way, you know, for one who's been practicing sadhana bhakti, we see that you know, the objects of the senses are still there. Their senses interact with the objects of the senses, but they're not affected by it. And just like, you know, we eat nice food, but they don't become, oh, I want more, I want more, I want more. No, they just eat sufficient. You know, well, the eyes may see pleasing objects, attractive objects. But they're not, you know, for one who's self-controlled, they're not always like looking to engage the senses in this way. They're not enamored by these things. They just see them and they see them and that's it. Just like there's a nice story that Prabhupada would tell about Yudhisthira Maharaj. One time Krishna, he was asking Yudhisthira Maharaj, he said, Yudhisthira Maharaj, he says, your mother Kunti, she's very beautiful. He says, yes, he says, I can see that. He says, but I mean, how does that affect you? And he says, you know, I just don't think about it. I can see she's beautiful, but we don't think about that. We just, you know, just go, because, you know, Yudhisthira was considered to be a very, very self-controlled person. And so even though his mother was very, very beautiful, and they were, you know, the five of them were constantly with their mother, etc., he wasn't affected by this. So we see that a self-controlled person is not affected. This is Dhamma. And it says, Sama Dhamma Tapala Satcham. And Krishna describes all the different qualities of a Brahmana. And one of the goals of the members of the Krishna Consciousness Movement is to cultivate or develop all these different qualities, primarily through the practices of devotional service. Through the process of sadhana bhakti, this helps us. And as Prabhupada points out, in this age of Kali Yuga, the two most important qualities are socham and arjavam, honesty. In this age, because it's actually said the only remaining leg of religiosity in Kali Yuga is this arjavam, this honesty. You know, you see that you've read that description in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the first canto, how Kali is there beating Dharma, the bull, and he's standing on one leg, and that one leg is honesty, and it's shaking, just about ready to give way. And that's Kali Yuga. That's what's going on. This last leg of religiosity is just about given away. And it won't actually be that much longer. Now we can see how degraded this age has become. It's completely, even now, you know, my wife and myself were discussing when we were in India. Even now we see in India, it is faintest remnants of good qualities there now. It's just becoming so degraded. Yeah. It's just becoming like anywhere else in the world. No, it's not that much different anymore. So we see this Krishna consciousness movement has this purpose of developing these qualities. Because I was reading this article last night by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. There's a book by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur called Brahman and Vaishnav. And at the end there's an article written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And in this article he talks about basically he's talking about developing Brahminical qualities, but he talks about the difference between a material Brahmana and a spiritual Brahmana. Does anyone know what the differences would be? Or have any guess on what the differences might be between a material Brahmana and a spiritual Brahmana? That's pretty close. That's pretty close. Actually, he mentions that how a material Brahmana thinks he's a Brahmana based on birth. You know, I'm born into a Brahmin family. And we see here, we read this story, you know, of Muchukunda, and it's quite interesting because this is one of the points I really wanted to highlight here. He says, as for ourselves, this is in verse 31, as for ourselves, O tiger among men, he's addressing Krishna here, we belong to a family of fallen Kshatriyas, descendants of King Ikshvaku. My name is Muchukunda, O Lord, and I am the son of Yovanashva. He's not saying that, you know, I'm the best of the Kshatriyas, I'm so wonderful, I'm so powerful, I did this, I did that, I was fighting for the demigods for, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years, and I conquered the demons. He's not, you know, as we say, he's not blowing his own horn. He's humble. So this is, he's manifesting qualities. And this is the symptom of a spiritual Brahmana, is he manifests qualities. Krishna describes, you know, we see in the Gita that when Krishna describes the Kshatriyas and the Brahmanas, he talks about their qualities, he doesn't talk about their activities. Even though we know the activities of a Brahmana, we know the activities of Kshatriyas, we know what they are. But the thing, you know, because Krishna is talking about Daivi Varnashram, he's not talking about, you know, Asurik Varnashram. He's talking about Daivi or saintly, you know, Varnashram that's possessing a good quality. So he's describing the qualities of the leaders of society. And this is how a Brahmana is known. It's not by his birth, because you can see, you can go many places in India and you will see, you know, like for instance, you go to Vrindavan, you can see rickshaw wallahs with Brahman threads. And they'll tell you they're a Brahmana. But how is that? They're performing some menial task. They're working for someone else. And thinking they're a Brahmana. They're actually deluded by the influence of this age, because actually a Brahmana will not engage in service to another like that. A Brahmana will not be paid. Because if a Brahmana is paid like that, if he takes a wage, then he's actually considered he's not a Brahmana. He's become a Sudra or less. So you see like that. So we see here that Muchukunda was a great personality, and he wasn't just talking about all the things he had done. You know, I conquered the demons, I fought with the demigods, I did this, I did that. Not all I. You know, he's talking about, well, you know, I'm just a fallen soul. You know, I come in a race of fallen Kshatriyas. He's very, very humble. And then in the purport to that verse, it's an interesting point that's been made there. It says, it is common in Vedic culture that a Kshatriya will humbly introduce himself as a Chakra Bandhu, a mere relative in a Kshatriya family, not trying to bring attention to himself. Yet if we look, for instance, we look in the Mahabharata, the difference between the Pandavas and the Kauravas was quite clear. You know, Yudhisthira Maharaj was the embodiment of humility. He was such a humble person. It's just extraordinary how humble he was. You know, even like, you know, there's one really nice story. I'm sure some of you know this story better than I do, so I'll just remember it to the best of my ability. Where as when in the first 12 years of exile, when the Pandavas were living in the forest, Duryodhana and Karna had this idea to humiliate the Pandavas. They wanted to go there and humiliate them, just laugh at them, look at them. They're living in the forest and they're wearing bark and deerskin and things like this. You know, ha ha ha, aren't they so in such a wretched condition? Anyhow, so Indra got wind of this, yeah? Because Indra's Arjuna's father. He got wind that this was going to happen. So he sent some Gandharvas there to arrest Duryodhana and Karna and the others. And what happened was they went there on the pretext, they got permission from Dhritarashtra that we're going down to the forest to count the cows. So on the pretext of going to count the cows, they went there with the specific intent of humiliating the Pandavas. So when they got there, they were met by these Gandharvas, and the Gandharvas, of course, fought with them, defeated them, and arrested them, and bound up Duryodhana. And then when Yudhisthira came to hear of this, his immediate concern was, oh, these are members of our dynasty. We cannot allow them to remain in this humiliating situation. We have to go and free them. Bhima, when he heard of this, he thought, oh, Hari Bol, this is wonderful. Yeah? He was just like so excited that this is great. You know, he's like licking his lips and rubbing his hands. This is great, you know, and now I don't have to kill them. You know, you think this is fantastic. But Yudhisthira wanted to go and free them because he thought this is a humiliation to our dynasty. We can't allow this to happen. So then he went there, and Arjuna fought with the Gandharvas, and not only did he defeat them, he embarrassed them. Because there's a couple of stories where Arjuna fought with Kshatriyas. One time he fought with a Kshatriya, he just took a torch, you know, the flaming torch. He just took a torch and he just completely. I think his name was Chitrarata. I'm not sure if it's the same story, but I mean, Arjuna was just an extraordinary warrior, incredibly powerful. Yet we see that, you know, Yudhisthira, even though he had this opportunity, he could have easily wiped out Duryodhana at this time. He did not take that opportunity because he was a noble person. Whereas we see with Duryodhana, he was a very crooked and dishonest person. You know, he tried to poison Bhima. He tried, you know, this like Shakuni was rolling the dice, but they were loaded dice. You know, it was just the whole thing was just so dishonest. But you know, and the whole everything that Duryodhana did was so dishonest, so underhanded. Yet Yudhisthira, because he was such a noble person, he was a man of great honor. He was a great man of great integrity, that if he gave his word, he saw it through, even though if the other person was being dishonest. So he was a man of principle, a man of character. And this is what one of the things that Krishna consciousness is about, is developing principles and developing character. Because many of us have come from completely characterless, you know, backgrounds, lacking in, not even lacking integrity, don't even understand what integrity is. Huh? You know, I remember as a child stealing money from my mother's purse. Yeah? Is that an honest thing to do? I won't tell you what we did with the money, but anyway, we used to, you know, that was the easiest way because my mother used to just leave the purse sitting there. It was so easy. And we wouldn't go and mow the lawn because that was hard work. We get, you know, our father would give us a dollar to mow the lawn. Yeah? So the culture we come from encourages that type of background. But we see here that Muchakunda is a person of great integrity. He's saying here, in ancient Vedic culture, to claim a particular status on the basis of one's family relations was itself indicative of a fallen position. And we see, with Duryodhana, he was constantly claiming, you know, how great he was because he was born in this dynasty, because he was this, because he was that, indicating that he's proud and puffed up. And we can see that it's quite common in this age, how people are claiming, you know, I'm the son of so-and-so, I'm the son of a lawyer, I'm the son of a doctor, I'm the son of this or the daughter of that or whatever, indicating their pride. No, actually, what is our quality? We have no good qualities. If we analyze ourselves, we'll see we have no good qualities. There's a song by Narottam Das Thakur, I believe, where he's pointing out the same point, how I have no good qualities. Oh, actually, no, that's Bhaktivinoda Thakur, isn't that song? Gurudev Kripa Bindudi, you know, Kore Dasa, he's saying that how I have no good qualities, that, you know, your mercy is all I'm made of. Yeah? Kshatriyas and Brahmanas should be given status according to their merit by their qualities of work and character. When the caste system in India became degraded, people proudly claimed to be relatives of Kshatriyas and Brahmanas, though in the past such a claim, unaccompanied by tangible qualifications, indicated a fallen person. And we see even in Lord Chaitanya's times, in Navadvip, that people were also claiming to be Brahmanas, claiming to be very, very qualified simply because of their birth. But Lord Chaitanya also, one of the reasons he appeared was to show us what it means to be a devotee. What are the qualities of a devotee? A devotee is known by qualifications, not by qualities, not by dress. Anyone can dress up in a dhoti and kurta. Anyone can shave their head. It's quite popular these days. Huh? And how many people do you see with seekers? Huh? I remember in Poland one time, I was on the train station, on the platform in Warsaw, and I saw this guy walking down with a seeker. Really nice, you know, perfectly round, you know, looked like, wow, what a fired up brahmachari. And he was smoking a cigarette. Huh? And he's probably drunk too, because most of the people in Poland are drunk most of the time. Huh? So, I mean, it's quite common in these days. You know, and even like, you know, Kunti Mala, you'll often see people wearing Kunti Mala. They get, you know, it become quite popular to wear beads like this. So just the externals doesn't make one a devotee. It doesn't make one a lover of Krishna. As we see here with Muchukunda, he's praying, he's talking to Krishna here. He says, you know, I've wasted all this time, O unconquerable one, becoming more and more intoxicated by my domain and opulence as an earthly king, misidentifying the mortal body as the self, becoming attached to children, wives, treasury and land. I suffered endless anxiety. You know, we see our acharyas, they also talk the same way. Yeah? What Narottam Das Thakur says, knowingly drinking poison. Or Lord Chandas Thakur, what is this very nice verse, he says, Kamana Dala Dala Jivana Talamana. That my life is tottering like a drop of water on a lotus petal, on a lotus leaf. I don't know if you've ever seen that. The lotus is when they get water. The leaves are like that, so the middle fills up with water. And then when it gets a certain amount of water, it overbalances the leaf and it just goes shoop like that and all the water shoots off. Not one drop left. And because it's got some sort of wax or something on the surface and the water does not adhere to the leaf. So he's saying that his life is like that because he's knowingly engaged in the service of miserly men. He's knowingly tried to enjoy his senses. Wasted his life. Muchukunda is making the same point. I've wasted my life. But he's not talking about himself here. Because we understand that he's actually, you know, this again, I mentioned this point before. The great acharyas, they talk like this and they actually do feel like this. It's not just like, you know, it's like they're talking just for our benefit and actually, no, I understand I'm a very, very advanced devotee, so, you know, it's not really for me that I'm saying this. No, they actually do feel like this. If you read the songs of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, there's a particularly nice book called Sharanagati, wherein Bhaktivinoda Thakur expresses many different moods, you know, of humility, I don't remember them all. But many different. There's like sections of the books which are expressing different moods, and you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is not just saying that for our benefit, but actually he feels like that. He feels that I am the most unqualified person, and we see this is described in the different stages of advancement in devotional service. There's Kanista Adhikari, there's Madhyama Adhikari, and there's Uttama Adhikari. So an Uttama Adhikari actually feels. We see, like for instance, in the example of Prahlad Maharaj, that everyone else is a devotee of Krishna except for me. And they firmly believe that everyone else is a devotee of Krishna except for me. And we see, you know, Narottam Das Thakur in his writings, you know, knowingly drinking poison, he says. What is that poison that he's drinking? He's saying that I'm engaging in the service of miserly men, you know, constantly trying to enjoy my senses. But we see, Narottam Das Thakur, his life is 100% devoted to the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not a moment is wasted. Could we say the same thing? That, you know, 24 hours a day I'm engaged in Krishna's service? I'd be happy if it was 24 minutes a day. Huh? But I can see that, you know, I don't spend that much time serving Krishna. You know, I may use the excuse of serving Krishna to, you know, to engage my senses in various things. But we see with the great acharyas is like that their whole life is nothing but Krishna bhakti, you know, from their waking moment to the moment they go to sleep at night, even when they're sleeping at night. You know, there was a story I heard about Srila Prabhupada, Tamal Krishna Maharaj told me, that Prabhupada was quoting a sloka to him, and he dozed off and he was sleeping for a little while, and then he woke up and he finished quoting the sloka. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he was thinking that actually Prabhupada was meditating upon the sloka while he was dozing. And we see that, you know, their lives are just completely centered around service of Krishna. And so Muchukunda, Krishna revealed himself to Muchukunda because Muchukunda was a great devotee of Krishna. He was just acting in his service just to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he's not proud. We can see here the way he's talking about himself. You know, I've wasted all this time, you know, becoming more and more intoxicated by my domain. Where's the evidence that he's become intoxicated by his domain and his opulence? He gave them up to serve the demigods. Just gave them up like insignificant. And what's that Tuchava describes the six Goswamis? It's how they gave up. And you look at Raghunath Das Goswami and Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami. Raghunath Das Goswami was the son of a wealthy, very wealthy, incredibly wealthy, like multi-billionaire wealthy person. And he was just constantly trying to run away from that. He just wanted to go and be with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You know, Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami were the prime minister and the treasurer, is it? The treasurer of the Nawab Hussein Shah. Extraordinarily powerful position. You know, the Nawab was the ruler of the whole of India. Very, very powerful. And he was his chief person. You know, when the Nawab would go off to hunt or the Nawab would go off to war, he would leave Sanatana Goswami in charge to run everything. Could do whatever he liked. And he gave it up. You know, even while they're supposed to be performing their duties as the prime minister and the treasurer, what are they doing? They're at home discussing the Bhagavatam with brahmanas. And then when the Nawab was saying, where are they? They send a doctor. You know, they get their sickness. You know, what do they call it? At school, you used to have to get a letter. You used to get a letter from your mum to say you were sick. So they sent a letter to the Nawab saying, oh, sorry, we can't come. We're sick. You know, doctor certificate. Yeah, we're sick. And then so he sent his court physician to check, and he found, actually, no, they're just there reading the Bhagavatam. So they had these incredibly wealthy positions. Extraordinarily. I mean, unimaginable wealth by today's standards. And they gave it up, as is described by Srinivasa Acharya. He says, tuchava, as insignificant. And just like a drop of dirt in the street. No importance. And it's just like you go outside and there's a bit of dirt on the ground. Who takes any notice of it? It's nothing. So they gave up this incredible wealth as nothing. And we see here the same with Muchukunda. He gave up this incredible position, his family, everything. He gave it up as nothing in order to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He was a man of qualities. And the Krishna Consciousness Movement is for this purpose, is to help us to develop qualities, to guide us, to inspire us in this way, that we understand that the importance of the human form of life is not to engage, as Rishabh Dev says, is nayam deho deha bhajan rinoke kastam kaman ahate vidbujam ye. This is vidbujam, means village animals, hogs and dogs. This is the activities of eating, sleeping, mating, defending. This is not what life is all about. Because these things are freely available to the vidbujam, to the village animals, the hogs and dogs which eat stool. He points out, he says, tapo dibyam putraka yena shatvam. He says that this human form of life, he says tapo dibyam. It's interesting because he doesn't just say tapo, he says tapo dibyam. Transcendental or divine austerities meant to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This will help us to achieve this position of Brahman, to actually become transcendental. So this is what the human form of life is meant for, is to transcend the modes of material nature, to actually become God conscious. This is what human form of life is all about. No other purpose here. Not to become, you know, wealthy, not to become very smart, not to become very beautiful, not to get, you know, big family to worship us or anything like that, not about getting birth, high birth or anything like that. Kunti points this out. She says, you know, he says that the people who are interested in improving themselves in terms of wealth, beauty, fame, knowledge, they cannot approach Krishna. Because they're, why? Because they're trying to improve themselves materially. If we're trying to improve ourselves materially, we're pushing Krishna away. Because as Prabhupada explains, he says, you know, the material life and spiritual life are like oil and water. You cannot mix them. So it may be that for some time you can mix water, you shake it up, it looks, you know, it goes like a grey, milky kind of a colour. It looks like they're mixing. But you put the jar down, you let it settle, and what happens? The oil rises up. So in the same way, the spiritual material life, it may look for some time like, oh yes, it's going very, very nicely. And we've seen time and time again, in my short time in ISKCON, I've seen time and time again how devotees, they try to mix material and spiritual life. And in due course of time, it separates. And they have to choose. And generally speaking, they choose material life. If we have these attachments, we need to give up these attachments to material life, to enjoying ourselves in the material world. And understand, as Krishna says, he says, Bhaktadang Yagyatapasam, that I am the enjoyer. We have to understand this clearly, that we're not the enjoyer, we're the enjoyed. This is our position, is to be enjoyed by Krishna. If we can understand this and we can use our lives simply for the satisfaction of Krishna. And you know, this process of devotional service is a wonderful opportunity to do that, because we're given so many different activities, so many different things that we can do, things that we can see, things that we can think, things we can talk about, books to read. They're all centered around Krishna. So we can use all our senses in the service of Krishna. Atasya Krishna Namadi Navaved Graham Indre Sevan Mukhi Jivido Swayam Eva Spuratyadaha. That is described by Rupa Goswami, the transcendental nature of the name, form, quality, and the pastimes of the Lord are very difficult to understand. He said, you cannot understand them actually. But when one's senses become saturated with transcendental devotional service of the Lord, and Sevan Mukhihi Jivado, that this saturation begins with the tongue. By engaging the tongue in chanting the glories of Krishna, by engaging the tongue in tasting Krishna Prasad, and then by engaging all the senses in Krishna Bhakti, then the transcendental nature of the name, form, quality, and pastimes of the Lord are revealed to us when the senses become, as Rupa Goswami says, transcendentally saturated. And when they're saturated, it means, it's just like, you know, if I saturate my clothes with water, it means there's no room for anything else. There's no room for dryness because they're saturated. So in the same way, the senses need to be saturated with Krishna. And when they become completely saturated with Krishna, then in this way we'll understand Krishna. Not completely, but to our capacity, we'll understand Krishna. And this is what this Krishna consciousness movement is all about, is to saturate us with Krishna consciousness. It's not to give us a nice position. It's not to give us, you know, knowledge. It's not to give us nice clothes, you know, beautiful tilak, and all these different external things. That's not what it's about, you know. Yet we see many devotees, they come to this Krishna consciousness movement with material desires, and they use the Krishna consciousness movement to fulfill their material desires. In the beginning, this may be okay. As it points out I think it's the second canto, third chapter of the Bhagavatam, it says, Akama, Savakama, Va, Mokshakama, Dadi, Tibrena, Bhati, Yajeta, Purushan. Whether we're full of all material desires, we're without material desires, or we desire liberation, one should by all means worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in the beginning stages, if we have material desires, this is natural, it's understood, it's accepted that we're going to have these desires, but we don't use Krishna consciousness as a vehicle to further those desires. This is when the problem comes. If we're just using Krishna consciousness just to perpetuate my bad qualities, to perpetuate my anartas, these anartas will take us away. This Krishna consciousness movement is there to help us to purify our anartas. This is what anarta nivritti means. Rupa Goswami, he describes the process of devotional service starting with Shraddha. Ado Shraddha Tathasadu. Anatta Nivritti Shat. So it says Bhajana Kriya. Bhajana Kriya means the practices of devotional service, means hearing, chanting, dancing, taking prasadam, all the different, worshipping the deity. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Parasevanam, Achanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmani, Vedanam. All the nine processes of devotional service means Bhajana Kriya. Then Bhajana Kriya leads to Anatta Nivritti. Anatta Nivritti means removing the impurities from the heart. So if we're sincerely practicing the process of devotional service, Anatta Nivritti will automatically take place. However, if we're maintaining material desires, it's like trying to put out a fire with gasoline, as the analogy is given there. You may be pouring a lot of gasoline, and what happens? The fire just gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. You cannot, like sometimes people advocate this process of, I forgot the name of it. Narad Muni talks about two processes. One is where you give up these material desires by renouncing them, and the other is where you overcome your material desires by saturating your senses with these things, like burning your senses out. Pravritti and Nivritti Marg, that's it, thank you. So there's Pravritti and Nivritti Marg. So one is you engage your senses in the objects of the senses till you just become completely disgusted with it. And the other is where you keep yourself distant from the objects of the senses. And of course, in Vaishnavism, we recommend the path of Pravritti Marg, like keeping yourself distant from the objects of the senses. But some people, they like to follow Nivritti Marg and engage the senses in these objects. Yet often what happens, if this is not done very carefully, is they become overwhelmed by the objects of the senses. Rather than overwhelming the senses, they overwhelm their intelligence. And they just think, this is very wonderful, I should do more of this. So an intelligent person will use this human form of life, will use this process of Krishna consciousness to take shelter of Krishna more and more, not to take shelter of the objects of the senses, not to try to perpetuate our material existence. Because the reality is, the material world is a miserable place. It is not as Lord Chaitanya would say, it is not a fit place for a gentleman. So we have this opportunity of Krishna consciousness. We have this, as Prahlad Maharaj would say, this rare human form of life. Dulabham Manasam Janma. Very, very rare human to have the human birth. Out of 8,400,000 species of life, we've actually achieved a human birth. Very rare. So don't waste this birth. Don't use this, don't try to further your position in this world, because it's a temporary thing anyhow. It will only last for a few years. How long can you be the king of the country? 40, 50, 60 years, then what? You die. How long does it last? It's so temporary. Why waste your time? That's the point I feel that Muchukunda is making, is I've wasted so much time. I could have been engaged in serving you. I could have been engaged in thinking of you 24 hours a day, but I've wasted my time. So don't waste your time. Don't perpetuate this miserable material existence. You may think it's nice now, but the fact of the matter is it's not very nice now, and things are going to get worse and worse and worse. As Kali Yuga progresses, it is going to become more and more difficult to live here. The Bhagavatam talks about how the government will be harassing people so much they'll all go live in the caves in the forest to escape the government. It's getting like that more and more all the time. So don't give up this illusion of this being a nice place. Give up this illusion that we can enjoy here. Because even if you get some enjoyment, it's only temporary. It does not last. And what's the capacity of the human body to enjoy anyhow? Very limited. So use the short amount of time we have wisely for the satisfaction of Krishna. Thank you very much. Any questions at all?
say that a devotee should not have material desires, but sometimes in the process of devotional service, a devotee expects Krishna to be like his arrangement, Krishna to enter where in the life of the devotee, just for small, small arrangement. That may not be the material desires, but devotee becomes dependent on that. So if you do decide, or we should not depend on such issues, just let it happen.
Obviously this depends on one's advancement in Krishna consciousness. Of course, it is better to approach Krishna than to approach the devas. You know, you go to Durga or to Shiva or one of these, you know, personalities to get the things you're looking for. Better to approach Krishna, because at least, you know, as it says, akama savakama mokshakama tivarina bhakti yoga yajeta purusham, by all means we should approach Krishna. So if it is that we want our material desires fulfilled, then approach Krishna. Don't approach anyone else. He will fulfill them. Maybe not the way you want, but he will fulfill them in one way or another. Either he'll fulfill them or he'll remove the desire. Yet better is that we approach Krishna in the mood of the gopis. But this is very, very elevated. This is not for, at least devotees of my level. This is a very, very elevated consciousness where the gopis had no interest. And actually, when I was here in Melbourne last, we were reading the section about the gopis and their service to Krishna. Lord Chaitanya said that this is the supermost standard of devotional service, this service of the gopis, this mood of the gopis in serving Krishna, where they were ready to give up everything. Their good name in society, everything, just to please Krishna. So this is very, very elevated. And, of course, this is what we aspire to. But first we have to deserve that. We don't just think, oh, now I'm going to be like a gopi. Because, you know, there is a group of people in India who do that, and they're called Prakriti Sahajas. You know, what do they call them? Saki Bekis. They dress up in sari. Men dress up in saris and try to act like gopis. But really all they're doing it for is so they can indulge in sex life and give it a religious sort of a flavour. That's all they're really doing. They're not actually making spiritual advancement. Because of their disrespectful behaviour, they're actually going backwards spiritually. So we need to be realistic about our level of development in spirituality and act accordingly. Not that we try to act beyond our... There used to be this phrase, I don't know if devotees still use it, it was called premature transcendence. We don't try to, don't try to walk before you crawl, so to speak, because you might hurt yourself. And devotees sometimes, when they try to act beyond their capacity as devotees, can have fall downs. Just like we see, Ramananda Roy. You've heard of Ramananda Roy? Very, very advanced devotee. Extremely advanced. No sex desire whatsoever. His service for Jagannath was he used to train the Devadasis, the dancers, the lords. You don't see them in India so much anymore, but there used to be these devotees of the Lord, female devotees, who would simply give their life for the pleasure of the deity. And they had a ceremony where they'd actually marry the deity. So they'd become like concubines of the deity, and they would dance for the deity and so many things like this. Whole life was just for the pleasure of Jagannath. So Ramananda Roy, he used to take care of them, and he used to bathe them and wash them with his own hands. They'd be naked and he would be bathing them. Now for Ramananda Roy, it didn't affect him at all. But not in my wildest dreams would I put myself in such a situation, because I know what would happen. And so we need to be aware of our degree of development in devotional service and act accordingly. So, if you have these material desires, you can't, you can't sort of satisfy them in any way. You can't, by development of your relationship with Krishna, overcome them at this point in time, not to say you won't in the future, then by all means, ask Krishna. Please, Krishna, please fulfill this desire. And while you're at it, please purify me of the desire. There's no problem with asking Krishna for things. Better to ask him than to ask someone else, because when you ask him, you become purified of the desire eventually, because you'll engage, and whatever it is he brings, you engage that in his service. And by engaging things in service, you become purified of the reaction. Because if the I'm sorry, the answer is a little bit long, but if we're engaging in activities in the world, in this material world, not only is the material activities, not only is there a concomitant reaction, but there's also the proclivity to do that activity more increases. But when we do these things for Krishna, or we engage these types of activities in Krishna's service, the proclivity is not increased. The sinful or the material proclivity does not increase. So that's purifying. Even though it may be a material desire, by doing it for Krishna, it's very purifying. Just like, you know, we have devotees who have had, you know, been singers in bands. So they come and do this service for Krishna, and eventually they give it up. Whereas you look at like these material people, you know, like you look at like someone like, hey, I don't want to get into names, but there are, you know, these rock and roll, you know, this is going to go on the internet, I have to be careful what I say. they get these rock and roll bands, and some of these bands, you just think, these guys are going to keep doing it until they die. They all already look like they're dead. You know? They've taken so many drugs and had so much illicit sex, they already look like they're dead. But they become increasingly attached, more attached, more attached, more attached. They'll never give it up. But devotees, they give up these things. Because, why? Because they're engaging this in Krishna service, they become freed from the attachment. So by all means, ask Krishna if that's what you need to do, if that's what's going to help you advance. The main thing is to focus on Krishna. Kripa Sindhu. Just because someone's a pure devotee doesn't mean they don't have bad qualities. Just because someone's a pure devotee does not mean they don't have bad qualities. Bhima had bad qualities. He had anger. He was a glutton. But he still had some bad qualities. I mean, you see at the end when they were walking up into the mountains, he fell down early. And then was it Arjuna asked Yudhisthira? Someone asked Yudhisthira. Who was it? Asked Yudhisthira why, or Bhima asked Yudhisthira why he had fallen. He said, because you're a glutton. A glutton. You never considered anyone else. You know, when he was eating, you know, when they ate food, right, whatever alms they would collect, they would divide in half. Half for Bhima, half for the rest. He never considered anyone else. He was, you know, and he was proud. And even, you know, like, these are the qualities he was manifesting in this, you know. I mean, I don't understand the depth of it, you know, how Krishna was manifesting, or why he was manifesting it like that. But he did have these qualities. Yeah? Whereas we see with Yudhisthira, he was, you know, his name was Ajatashatru, meaning one whose enemy has never been born. He never saw anyone as an enemy. He had many, many wonderful qualities. Yet still, he wouldn't lie for Krishna. Yeah? Up until that point, it said that his chariot would float above the ground. After that point, because he wouldn't lie for... Some people say it's because he told a lie. But Vaishnavas understand, because he wouldn't lie for Krishna. See, just because someone is classified as a pure devotee doesn't mean that they're on the same level as the gopis. There's gradations. It's not that it's all one. There's gradations. Even with impurity, there's gradations. There's pure, more pure, most pure. It's all pure. But there's gradations. It's just like milk, you know, there's different, you know, you can cook milk down, 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 make it thicker and thicker. It's still milk. But there's gradations, and sometimes there's water in the milk. There's gradations. So even though he's a pure devotee, what level of pure devotee, I don't know. But there's gradations. The gopis, as Lord Chaitanya said, this is the topmost standard of devotional service. they're pure devotees. We see Uddhava is a pure devotee. We see, you know, so many others are pure devotees. Prahlad Maharaj is a pure devotee. But there's gradations. It's not all one. There's variety. That's what makes it interesting. There's so much variety. Yeah. Yeah, but there's Satyabhoma, there's Rukmini, there's Radharani, there's Chandravali. There's so many, you know. Yeah, see, it's like, as we see with Arjuna, you know, he was put into bewilderment by Krishna. So when a devotee is here in the material world, it may be that there's something going, like some covering over that devotee of yoga maya, and they're acting in a particular way for Krishna's satisfaction. And they may not know that. They may be doing things that appear, just like we see with Jai and Vijay. Right, they descended as Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. Even though they are devotees of Krishna, they don't remember that. They don't remember they're great devotees of Krishna. So, you know, there's this covering of Krishna's potency, you know, generally yoga maya potency, which is causing him to act in a particular way. So Bhima is acting out of anger, but he's not thinking, as far as I understand, he's not thinking, oh, I'm doing this for Krishna's pleasure. He's doing this because he hates them. Huh? Yeah, the point is like, you know, we can't see, you know, I don't recommend that we see ourselves in the same category as the Pandavas, for instance. You know, because that Krishna says to Arjuna in the Gita, he says, many, many births both you and I have taken together. I can remember all of them, you cannot. So he's constantly with Krishna, yet he doesn't remember his position. He doesn't realize, you know, half the time he doesn't realize, you know. It wasn't until Krishna revealed his universal form to Arjuna and then showed the other forms afterwards that Arjuna realized who Krishna was fully. Well, not fully, but, you know, he had a much deeper realization of who Krishna was. So because he was acting, you know, that we see the bewilderment, he's throwing down, he says, oh, Govinda, I shall not fight. He's throwing down his bow, he's acting in bewilderment. But he's still a pure devotee. You know, he's crying, he's like, you know, his hair is just, you know, like so many emotions he's going through. But he's still a pure devotee. But, you know, Krishna's put him into that situation. So Krishna makes arrangements for devotees in order that he can carry out his pastimes. And so, you know, what exactly was going on with Bhima, I cannot say, but he manifested qualities that are not suitable for us. Yeah, but, you know, I mean, like, you know, there's even one I was listening to the other day where he's drinking Dushyant's blood. It's, you know, he ripped out the heart of someone else, he ripped their heart out. I mean, he was like, you know, he did some pretty, what we would consider and understand to be very horrible things. But he was acting in a particular way for a particular reason, which I don't fully understand. But it's not that, you know, because he was doing these things he's not a great devotee of Krishna. Even there's one story of one of the Alwas in South India. He was trying to build a temple. I think it was the temple of Ranganath. And he was approaching all these wealthy merchants and none of them would give any money. So then he decided, okay, I'll get their money. And he engaged a band of dacoits to steal all their money. And then he built the temple. Now, if you put a materialistic or a mundane understanding on that, then he's a criminal. However, his motivation was simply to build a temple for Krishna. He didn't take a penny for himself. And at the end, he arranged this situation where all the dacoits were looking for the money. He'd taken the money and used it to build the temple. The dacoits were looking for the money. Somehow or other, he arranged for them all to go onto this island, telling them that the money was on the island. They all wound up fighting amongst themselves and killing each other. And so he dealt with the dacoits, he built the temple, and he, you know, engaged the merchants in Krishna's service. But there's, you know, there's a great transcendentalist, he can do things like that. So we shouldn't try to imitate. This is, what's that, Vaishnavera Kriya Mudra Vigena Bhaja. You cannot understand the activities of, or the mind of a great personality. So they can do things like that. So, yeah, I mean, Bhima did manifest what would, you know, in our understanding be bad qualities. Yeah, we aspire for the qualities that Krishna presents as being desirable. Don't aspire to be like Bhima. Don't aspire to be like Yamaraj. They're great devotees, but you know they're performing. Or Kali. Don't aspire to be like Kali. You know, because she's performing particular service for Krishna. She's a great devotee of Krishna, but she runs around with a chopper chopping off the heads of demons. Kali. We can't be. These are great personalities. We just try to. You know, Krishna's described in the Gita what qualities are desirable for us. These are the qualities we should aspire for. Yeah. I can't hear you. The senses superior. See, the senses also have their subtle aspect. Also, they're not just the senses are not just matter. They function through matter, but they're not just made of matter. And the thing is, the senses enjoy matter. That's their function, is to enjoy matter. And so, in that way, they're superior because they're exploiting. See, I mean, the way I understand it is the senses have their, you know, they manifest in these different ways, right, through the touch, the ears, the eyes, stuff like that. And, of course, scientifically they explain in a mundane way, yeah, that it's electricity and things like that. Yet the soul himself, he cannot directly contact matter. Yet through the medium of the senses, the soul gets the experience of matter. So the soul is superior. It describes that in the Gita. It describes how the soul is superior. Above all these things, mind, intelligence, policy, ego, the senses and matter. That's the gradation. And through the medium of the senses, the soul is able to enjoy or experience the objects of the senses, matter. So the senses have this subtle aspect of you know, assisting the jiva in experiencing matter. I don't understand the technicalities of it so much. Yeah, like I say, I don't understand the technicalities of it so much. Yet we see that in order for us to hear, Krishna has to manifest his ears first. Yeah, and from that comes the manifestation of sound, from Krishna's hearing. It all comes from Krishna. But, I would have to read up on it. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much for patiently listening. Gantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.